Well, I think it's great to do this. I'm glad they're doing this. This is Dale Urquiaga with the Nevada Legislature Oral History Project. Today is Monday, April 28th, and I'm in Sparks, Nevada, where I'm going to have a conversation with former Assemblyman Bob Price. So, Bob, tell me about your house.
Well, it's so interesting, and I just love it. This house was built in the 1800s in Virginia City, if you can imagine. And I, by the way, have gone up and kind of gone through old pictures and everything and found pictures of it when it was up there. And in about 1907, they took and moved this house down the hill from Virginia City. And I don't know if they used oxes or what they used, but they moved it down across Washoe Valley and into Reno. And it was in Reno for some 45 years or so. And then they took and moved it from Reno to here and set it up. And of course, we just love it. But it's got a wonderful, wonderful history.
When did you move here?
We moved here, we initially lived next door.
Okay.
After in 2003 was my last legislative session, and we end up buying the two houses next door. You can't see the one from here, it's back a little ways, from some old friends of Nancy's. As a matter of fact, bought them from his wife, but former legislator Les Gray. And we moved there, and we lived there for a few years, and then this came up for sale about 5 or 6 years ago, and Nancy come out and looked over the fence one day and she said, I gotta have that house. So we ended up buying this, and we just love it. It's wonderful.
Go on in.
Okay. Yeah, we just love it. It's a wonderful home with so much history to it. And we have, oh yes.
I want you to tell me about this.
Uh-huh. And since that's Elvis. Really? This is something that I love and is very close to me. Profession, if you want to call it profession, was a construction electrician for many, many years. And I spent 50 years working in the Las Vegas area. Going back, I moved there in 1954. And anyhow, one of the memorable jobs that I had was when they rebuilt what is now the Las Vegas Hilton,
okay.
But it had a different name when it was being built, and I can't quite remember. But anyhow, and it was actually the first real high-rise on the Strip. And so there were quite a large number of us electricians that worked there. So every day at lunchtime, as the building got up a ways, we would go down, all the electricians would go down to the showroom, because there were all kinds of seats there that they were, you know, getting ready for people. And we could sit and eat lunch and tell each other what we had to do and kind of keep track of things. So one day, and it was towards when the hotel was getting ready to open, we were sitting down there and the band came in to start practicing, getting ready for opening day. And up on the stage, in comes Elvis, who was the opening act, as it turned out.
Sure.
So he saw us sitting down there and came down and started talking to us. And he was just so nice. And it turns out he told us that he had, in fact, worked for Crown Electric in Tupelo, Mississippi. And we said, wow, you were an apprentice electrician? He said, no, I drove a truck delivering parts. But anyway, I always remember Crown Electric in Tupelo, Mississippi. So anyhow, I got my marker pen that I had out, and I had Elvis autographed the end of my lunch bucket, which I was really just so happy about. And right up the top, I think it was, oh no, over here was Jimmy Carter. I was going to say eventually Jimmy Carter. So then over the years, as I got involved in politics and started going around to all kinds of meetings and everything, I ended up getting other famous people. Got Dolly Parton and Jesse Winchester, who most Nevadans know, is a former working girl and has written some books, a very nice lady. And she's a very good friend, and her husband was an apprentice electrician of mine in Las Vegas. I mean, it's just the small Nevada thing.
So this is Elvis?
This is Elvis, a little bit faded, but you can look real close and
Elvis.
You can see.
Where's President Carter?
And President Carter is right there. And this happens to be Obama. I just got him the other day.
That's a new one.
Yeah. And I have
Barbara Vukanovich
and Charo, who is wonderful. And
let's see, this looks like former Governor Miller.
Yes,
okay.
Bob Miller and Harry Reid. And up on top, you can see close, I got
Bill Clinton
and Hillary Rodham Clinton.
Boy.
And the interesting thing about that is I first met Bill Clinton way back when he was governor.
Sure.
We were at some kind of a legislative function in the state, and he gave a speech and talked to us. And of course, as we all know, he's probably one of the best speakers that you'll ever get. And so he was really nice, and I got him to sign my book. And then in later years, when Hillary started running around here and everything, and I met Hillary, she did the other side
That's
for me.
Great.
So that was like
That's quite a box.
Really special.
Okay. This is Dale Urquiaga with the Nevada Legislature Oral History Project. Today's Monday, April 28th, and I'm in Sparks, Nevada, at the home of former Assemblyman Bob Price. Gwen Clancy is videotaping this interview. Good afternoon, Mr. Price.
Oh, good afternoon, Dale.
So here's what I want to do. I want to take you back in time a little bit. Think back to January 20th, 1975, was the day you were first sworn in at the legislature.
Yes.
According to the newspaper, it was a warm day, and it was so nice that they did many of the opening session activities outside. Do you remember that?
Yes, as a matter of fact.
What was that
like
to show up for that session?
It was really neat, as a matter of fact, and there were a lot of people that showed up. And
so tell me about that day.
Oh, it was really great, as a matter of fact. And there were naturally a lot of people showed up, and we started learning some things about the history of the legislature, the legislative building, and so forth. Now, this was actually before the current legislative building was finished yet. They were working on it. So I started out in the old original building, which was really, really neat. I consider that a nice part of history that we had in those days, and very special. And I served there for the first term of my legislative sessions, and then by the time the next term came around, where we were able to move in to the new building and what have you, so that was very special.
Now, you had been in Las Vegas for a long time, but you're not from Nevada originally. Where'd you come
No.
from?
No. I was born in DeLand, Florida, which is a nice little town, and in Volusia County. And my mom was born not too far from there, and she was actually a Cherokee Indian, and she was born on the Cherokee Reservation there. So it was, that's kind of a nice little thing that, you know, that I appreciate with the history and so forth. And my father, as I ended up being, was a construction electrician, and he was working in the area at the time. And I'm not sure how they met, but had met and then eventually got married. And so where I started out from. I get back there every once in a while. As a matter of fact, we have a timeshare about 15 miles from there, so we'll go down every year or so
to
Florida and visit and stay for a couple of weeks and see friends. Of course, we have many friends there now, and what have you, and really enjoy it.
So how does an electrician end up running for the legislature? Why did you run for public office?
Well, it was kind of interesting, I think. It turned out that when I lived in Las Vegas at that point in time for many years, I lived on a very political area called Renata Circle, and it's an old-time street that, as it indicates, is a circle in the North Las Vegas area. And on that street, it was the political street of North Las Vegas. And over a period of time, we had, I believe, four assemblymen, a senator, the mayor, city councilman, various people that were involved in politics ended up living on that particular street. And that kind of got me started. And then at that particular time, my former wife, Brenda, was in fact in politics before I was. She was the city councilman there. Okay. And she was also a member of the, which was a big deal, the commission for the, where you have the convention authority,
the convention and
Las
Visitors
Vegas
authority.
Convention mm-hmm. and Visitors Authority. So she was very involved in politics and so forth. So that kind of helped nice. Me get a feel for things and get involved and get enjoyed also. But so that was kind of how I started, from the fact that I was there and had many friends who were involved in politics.
What was your first campaign like?
It was very nice. I my first campaign, I actually, my opponent was a very nice lady that was involved at the time. I'm trying to think of her name right now, and I'm not having, Ruby Duncan. Ruby Duncan, who was involved in politics, and she was a very nice lady. But then as I ran for the assembly on my initial campaign, my current wife, Nancy, and we've been married for 25 years now, 27. Anyhow, her good friend, who later became my very good friend, Tom Collins' wife, and Tom Collins, as you know, is a county commissioner, but he's a former state legislator, and his wife was my opponent in a race, and she and Nancy, my current wife, were very good friends, and so she called Nancy one day and asked her if she would do some research for her. She wanted her to contact various Republicans and people and talk to them about Bob Price and find out what my problems were so that she could use them in the race. Well, Nancy likes to indicate, which is true, she talked to many Republican and friends, and the answer that she got often was, well, I disagree with his politics on this item and that item and so forth, but he seems like a very nice guy. And she said she decided that she thought it was more important to find a nice guy to get married to than to worry about the politics. So she made sure that we met, and we did end up started dating, and we ended up getting married. And it worked out very nicely, as matter of fact.
Nevada was smaller in those days.
That yes, it definitely was. Circle. That was a small political circle in those days. I had never been. Now, Nancy had lived here in the Reno area and had two sons and a grandson here. But I, at that point in time, had never lived up here and had only visited once or twice. And so it was kind of new to me. Mm-hmm. And what have you, but it worked out quite nicely. By the time Nancy and I got married, my first wife was also in politics, as I indicated. Mm-hmm. She was a city councilman and a member of the board convention authority. But when we decided to move up here. Even before that, let me talk about it. We, as I indicated, I had many friends, and so I when I ran and got elected, fortunately, and we came up here. It was quite an experience because I had not spent at that point in time too much time, in the state capital or what have you. But it really is a small world. I like to take. I think some things are important. For example, the young man that lived next door to me when he was growing up, there on the. On Renata Circle, eventually went on and ran for office, and I always figured that maybe it was from the influence that I gave him, and became elected to the state legislature, to the Senate, and we've been good friends over the years for that. For that reason.
Who was that? Do you remember his name?
Yes, I do, and my mind is not working quite right now. Oh my gosh, this is terrible. Can I think of it in a moment? And
then sure, we can come back.
Pass
to
on, yeah.
We can edit it in, it's okay. So when you got to Carson City, Keith Ashworth was the speaker,
yes,
right?
Yes.
What was Keith like?
Very nice, very good. I got along very well with Keith and learned. He was good. They were quite good with freshman legislators and trying to do everything they could to get you oriented and getting out. So I was very fortunate that way. It kind of embarrassed me that I can't. Isn't working.
That's
but anyhow. So Keith was, and the legislature, and I believe it still is, was very good about having orientation sessions and what have you to teach the new people the procedures and everything for coming in. And so that worked out real good for me, too.
You worked with the NCLB a lot while you were
National Conference of State Legislatures, yeah.
Was that helpful for you?
It was very helpful because, as you know, most people coming in, they know, how to get elected and they know the politics, but they haven't necessarily learned all of the procedures that you need to know about doing business, like Robert's Rules of Order and those types of things. And our people, I have to say, were just and still are very hard workers. They put in many, many hours. And in those days, they didn't most of the time didn't get anything for all the extra hours they worked and what have you over the years. So finally, one year, I put in a bill, and it passed, and is people still are very appreciative. They talk about it, and it, what it does is gives them an extra week's pay and a week like a vacation after the session, and they were kind enough to generally refer to it as Bob Price days. So they're always real good, and they still do, and they're always so nice to me, because everything I ever ask them to check out or find out for me, boy, they just go get it all taken care of. But
do you remember some of the people that you worked with and staff? You were there a long time.
Yeah. My gosh, my mind isn't working right now. Jeannie Ornshaw's husband, Frank Dakin. Yeah, Frank was there when I started, and he is just probably one of the most knowledgeable people that you'll ever run into on the operation of legislatures and procedure and everything. He's just incredible. And our state historian,
Guy Rocha.
Guy was there, and he was just a very knowledgeable and helpful person too, that helped me over the years with everything.
John Crossley was
there. Yeah, John was there. Yes, yes.
Remember him?
Yes, I sure do. And he would, like, we were always lucky. We had such good people working for us. And I guess to get to that position, they had to be people who were interested and wanted to help and make things better and everything. And it was just, like, really, really good.
Let me ask you about the governors. You served with Governor O'Callaghan, Governor
Lynch, yes.
Governor Bryan, Governor Miller,
yes.
And Governor Gwynn.
And they were all very good.
Who's your favorite?
Governor. Well, I'm not sure. I hesitate to talk about a favorite, but I would say this. When Dick Bryan was governor, he did do me a big favor, and so I... And by the way, they all were excellent governors and good friends, as it turned out. But Dick Bryan did do me a good favor. When Nancy and I were going to get married, 2 days before our wedding, Dick announced in the newspapers and on so forth that he was calling a special session of the legislature that day. So I got on the phone and called him, and I said, Dick, Nancy and I, he knew Nancy, of course, because we'd been dating for a long time and we're friends. I said, Nancy and I are getting married that day. You can't have a special session of the legislature. And he said, oh, no problem. And so he set the special session back 2 days. And then he and Bonnie came to the wedding when Nancy and I got married. And we got married, and then the next day went to a special session of the legislature for our honeymoon.
Now, was that the special session that dealt with banking?
Yes.
Okay.
And it only went on for 2 or 3 days, as I recall. And then after it was over, we went ahead and said, well, why don't we do something else? So we went to San Francisco and spent a few days in the San Francisco area enjoying our honeymoon.
You became a committee chair fairly quickly in your career. You chaired
taxation
for a long time.
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
Well, taxation had, of course, many interesting. We took the tax off of food. I was really happy about that. I was chairman when we did away with that.
So that was the 1981 session?
I don't remember what year it was.
I think so. But, let's look for your picture here in 1981.
Yeah.
Are you here? You must be.
There I am, right down there. You could recognize me right away with my mustache and my...
This?
Yeah.
With all that hair?
With all that hair.
Wow. So tell me about the tax shift. Why the move from property tax to
the
to sales tax, but exempting food, right?
Well, yes. idea of property tax was fairly controversial. Now, there was actions going on in various states across the country dealing with property tax. And property tax, while it's certainly an income that you know is going to be there and so forth, is not a popular tax with the citizenry. So that was one reason that we were trying to look for other options that we might be able to use in lieu of the property tax to the extent that we can, that we could. And that was how that kind of came about during that period of time.
Okay. How is it different being a committee chairman from being just a member of the body?
Well, there, as a chairman, you end up being involved in more meetings and information coming in, and people who are interested, lobbyists, for example, and citizens groups and so forth, will contact your chairman on all kinds of things. And as a matter of fact, and it's not uncommon, a lot of, and I've even done it myself, would ask people not to call after 11 o'clock at night or what have you, because you get calls at all hours of the day looking for ideas and wanting to lobby or influence you or so forth. And so it was, and taxation as a committee had a lot of interesting subject matters. I remember one that kind of stood out for a long time. We had a legislator, and I do not remember his name, get elected from the Las Vegas area and come in. And he was very religious, very nice person. And I think it might have been his first bill that he introduced was to eliminate brothels in Nevada. So the bill was referred to taxation, my committee. So anyhow, I started getting as much information as I could, with research on taxation and so. But on the day that we held our hearing, the first day that we had the hearing, there were quite a few people showed up for it. And this gentleman came in to testify, and he was kind of noticeable right away because he came in, sat down up in the, with the audience there, and he had two beautiful young ladies, one on each arm, and sat there waiting for his turn to testify. Well, it turned out that his name was Joe Conforti, and he owned the Mustang Ranch in about 30 miles out of town. So he came and testified in opposition to the bill. So one of the things that he thought might be helpful would be for the legislators to learn a little more firsthand about the ranch and so forth. So he invited all of the legislators to come out to the Mustang and spend a weekend, and he would show them and teach them everything that they could about the ranch, and they would be able to see it live and know about it. So anyhow, he put the word out. Well, it turned out that Senator Bill Raggio, who is by far one of our most influential senators, even back in those days, very influential, was a former district attorney and had a major ongoing battle with Joe Conforti as district attorney. And he put the word out that he didn't want anyone to go on the trip. So as it turned out, most of the legislators decided that they didn't want to go, even though Joe was furnishing a bus and taking people out. So I felt that we should go and we shouldn't let a fight from past years obstruct our true knowledge of learning what we could about any type of operation. And I don't remember how many we had then, but now we actually have about 30 brothels in Nevada. Mm-hmm. And there are other states. There were, at the time, other states and locations. So anyhow, when we got ready to go out, there were just a handful, 7, 8, or 9 of us, who ended up taking the bus and going out to the Mustang Ranch. Well, by the time that came down, I knew there were going to be very few people. So I started inviting other other political people who might be interested, members of political groups and so forth, both male and female and so forth. And so when we went out, there were just a few of us legislators, plus the people, and I might add my wife, who I made sure she was with me, and we went out and spent an evening, and it turned out to be quite interesting, as a matter of fact. And it turned out, as we were having hearings and everything, that the Mustang Ranch alone, through the brothel tax, provided 1/3 of the county's budget, just from that one business, 1/3 of the county's budget
for
Story County came from the Mustang Ranch through our brothel tax. So that was really surprising to everybody. So we had the hearings, and Shirley Coletti came. She was a county commissioner at that point in time, but she also worked and was manager of the brothels, and was extremely interesting. But the next day in the newspaper, the Carson City Appeal paper came out with a story that said that all of the legislators had been invited to go on the trip, but only, I think there were 7 or 9 of us went. So it was obvious that all the rest of them knew everything there was to know about the Mustang Ranch. And it was really cute, I loved it. But just as a little small, little part of it, when I found out that the legislators weren't going, I started inviting other political people and groups and what have you. And it turned out that the mother, and I forget her name, but the mother of the reporter who did the story was one of the ladies who went with us. And so she called him and chewed him out and said, "Hey, did you know that I was on the trip too?" and all. So anyway, it was really quite interesting and kind of a fun thing to do.
If I recall, you sponsored that tour for several sessions after Joe Conforti left office.
Yes, we did that. Yeah. Yeah,
okay. Do you
as a matter of fact.
Ended?
Well, the last time I was at one of the, I was at the new Mustang Ranch,
okay.
And it was in February a couple of years ago, and Jesse Winchester, who's a very longtime friend and has written several books and was at one time a working girl herself. And her husband, by the way, Mike, was just small world we have in Nevada, was my apprentice electrician in Las Vegas when he was a kid. But anyway, she's a very good friend. And they had a birthday party for me out at the new Mustang. And I was able to invite friends to come in and from out of state, including out of state and so forth. And they put on a birthday party for me, and it was really nice and a lot of fun. And I got to meet the very nice lady, and I can't think of her name now, who is the madam that runs it. And It really was quite interesting. But I don't think I could afford their business. There were some customers that spend up to $10,000 and maybe more to come out and spend a few days there and take advantage of all the business that they have to go. But they have a really nice restaurant and everything. It's a great place. And interesting enough, a few years ago, they had come into the old Mustang Ranch with helicopters and taken all of the old buildings and everything and moved them out to this location. And they're like a historical type of situation now, and you can go in, which I did, went in and looked, and I'd say, oh, I remember that bed, and I remember that table, and this and that and the other, and it's kind of neat. Right. But one of the things that interested me while I was out there, and you'll notice that a lot of our cabs here in the Reno area advertise the Mustang Ranch with things on the top. And when we were out there, I noticed there were all kinds of cabs there all the time. And I thought, holy mackerel, you know, I wonder how much it costs to come out and everything. But I come to find out, interesting enough, there naturally are citizens who take a cab and go out. But the main business for the cabs is the girls coming to work every day. So they take the girls out there. I don't know what they charge them, but they take the girls out and they will stay there. And then other girls that are getting off shift and what have you, they'll bring them back home. But anyhow, it's kind of one of those interesting things.
I'm going to ask you to change gears a little bit here and tell me about your friend here on this sign.
Oh, okay.
This is one of the things that you're probably most well known for, your time at the legislature.
When I was at the legislature now, aliens had kind of been an interest of mine just on the side. And I spent a lot of years working at the Nevada test site.
Okay.
And I worked out where some of my electrician friends, I never worked back in the tunnel, but said that there were aliens back there. As you know, the first ones that allegedly landed were in New Mexico at
Roswell,
New Mexico. And the story was that some of them had been brought to Nevada back at the Nevada test site in the flats and were kept in a tunnel back under the mountain back there. And I honestly don't know whether they were or not, but I had electricians tell me who were working in the area that they were there, and then others said no, they were just saying that and so forth. So I really don't know. But anyhow, I was working back there. So I'd always kind of had a little bit of an interest in the subject matter of the aliens. So one year, and I can't quite remember what year it was, someone mentioned that we ought to consider naming a highway like for the extraterrestrials. And I said, oh boy, that really sounds good. So I got the bill, and we did in fact do that. So we named the highway, and the main little town on the highway is Rachel, Nevada, which actually in the old days when I worked at the Nevada test site was considered the kind of the back door to the test site, because there's quite a few people live in Rachel, and they could go in to one side of the Nevada test site, and particularly if they were working on that end of it, because the test site is 50 miles across or so, you know, if you're just going in there. So anyhow, we went ahead, we held hearings, and we did end up naming it the extraterrestrial highway. Well, they were making a movie at the time, and I'm trying to think, Independence Day, that's what it was. And so on the day that we actually dedicated the highway, we went out to Rachel, and they were making the movie. And so our little activity there got to be a part of the movie Independence Day. And so it was really kind of neat. And it turned out, in talking to the folks at the Little Alien Inn, which is the restaurant and motel and so forth there, that their business actually greatly increased after we named the highway, and because people started coming out, and I was told that the business went up almost three times as much as they were making before for people driving out the highway. And now when you look at a lot of Nevada maps, in fact I have a map book I could show you up there and open it, the road highway going up there, 375, actually is written along the highway, extraterrestrial highway. It has been recognized all over. And it's like a really kind of to us, a special little thing anyhow.
Didn't it take a couple sessions to pass?
Yes, right, yes.
Who held it up in the Senate? It was held in Senate Transportation.
Yeah. I can't quite remember, to be honest.
Do you remember why? Bill O'Donnell was chairman of Transportation. Do you remember how it finally got loose?
I hate to say it, but my immediate memory is doesn't recall.
Okay.
But my first guess would be that people didn't think it was, you know, worth spending the time and the effort on and what have you. But once it got there, once we got it on, actually the lieutenant governor was helpful at that time, because he had brought the subject up.
Lonnie Hammergren.
And he was very helpful in getting it going too. And I just think it was just a matter of people not thinking who wants to spend the time and the effort to print up the thing. But it turned out, it's interesting, that individual companies, private companies, started putting up signs. Of course, a lot of them have been stolen.
Sure.
People, they put up great signs, green signs with an alien on it that says extraterrestrial highway and everything. And people actually stole them and I guess took them off somewhere for whatever reason. And it was really quite interesting.
There was a very colorful and kind gentleman named Merlin.
In
the legislature.
Yes.
I know you were always very good.
Yeah, very, very good friends with Merlin.
Do you want to talk about him?
Well, Merlin was a very special young man, and I hate to say it, but immediately I can't think of his real name, but he did, in fact, go by Merlin. And he was very interested and kind of a person who was interested in extraterrestrials and in the whole subject matter and what have you. And was for some reason that I can't remember what the details were, but he lived out towards in Nevada.
They live east towards Mount House and Dayton,
or
was he further out?
No, he was over near about 30 miles this side of Las Vegas on. Where you come down the back highway
to
Pahrump, back out that way. And anyhow, for some reason that I have no idea, he ended up being killed.
Oh,
and it was quite a thing. He used to share my office. I let him share my office because he had quite a bit of stuff. And he was very nice and well-liked young man, you know, just a little bit of a character. But I, in those days, had the largest office in the building, in the new legislative building. And I had three separate rooms. And my main room where I kept my desk and all my stuff. I could look out over out the front of the building and so forth. And it was just kind of a little situation that happened. And I used to keep all of his personal stuff and everything in there. And anyhow, it was just one of those unfortunate things that happens from time to time.
I also remember you playing the guitar at the legislature at the end of every session.
At the end of the session. Procedurally wise, what would happen was that as we got down to the final days, you would take an action, vote on something, and so forth, and you had to wait for it to get printed and come back because you needed to have the printed copy before you did your actual vote on things. So we would end up having a lot of time that we were just sitting around waiting. So over the years, I have for many years been interested in country music, and did in fact have my own show in Las Vegas for quite a few years, a country music show.
What was the name
and
of the show?
It was called Bob Price and the Gambling Ranch Hands, and it was called Western Jubilee. In fact, I have to tell you just a little story right here. One day here in Reno, Nancy and I got into an elevator, and we were going somewhere. I don't remember just where it was. And there was a young lady and a little older, her mother, I guess, two ladies in the elevator. And the younger woman, now when I say younger, I'm talking like 25 or 30, I don't know. And she said, aren't you Bob Price? And I said, oh, yes. So I'm thinking politics, that she's going to ask me something about politics. And she said, when I was a little girl, you had a show in Las Vegas called Western Jubilee. And I said, yeah, as a matter of fact. And she said, yeah, when I was a kid, my mother used to make me watch it every Saturday. And it was so cute, but I couldn't believe it. I'm not sure I would have even remembered the name of the show if she hadn't said it, but anyhow, that was just one of those cute little things that happens.
So you played the guitar?
Yes, I played the guitar. My father was a guitar player, and in fact, I have a very historical and very expensive guitar that I have going back to my father's day and father's time. And what it is, when World War II started, we were living in San Antonio, Texas, and my dad was not in the military, but he was a construction electrician, and he was working at what is Brooks Field, which was a big military base at the time. And on the very next day after the war started, they shipped him to where the Japanese attacked us, to Pearl Harbor. And he took the guitar with him. He took his guitar with him. And so after the war, when he came home, he had this guitar, and he had gotten these stickers. I'll show it to you before we get done. These stickers of all kinds of dancing girls and Hawaiian girls and everything, and put all over it and what have you. And it's a Martin guitar, which is a very expensive one. And I was told at a dealership one time that it probably is worth several thousand dollars because they have the serial numbers on how old, and you can tell how old they are, and what kind of shape they're in. And of course, this one is not only that, it's special because it has all its stuff on it. But anyhow, but I learned to play from my dad, and so that's what kind of got me started playing the guitar.
You were obviously very interested in the people at the legislature and its history.
Oh, yeah.
What was your favorite part of being in the assembly?
Well, to be honest, in addition to the mechanical work you're doing, learning about the bills and everything, I was fortunate that I got, I was appointed to various national committees and things of that nature, and at certain times, and mostly when the session was not in not in session, I was able to go to various meetings around the country. I belonged to the, what is known as the National Conference of State Legislators, and that's a national committee, as it indicates. And I was on that for many years, and I was on the Council for State Governments, which was another, and I chaired a committee on that national committee, and so I was able to go to meetings and meet with other legislators and learned how they did various types of business with their legislatures and what have you, and it was just something that I really enjoyed, and it was really educational and good. I was trying to look at some notes that I had here. I thought I had some notes on different committees, but anyhow, the it was very good.
I remember that you had an interest in ballot questions, and you chaired constitutional amendments
yes.
for a while.
Yeah.
How did an electrician learn about constitutional law and that part of the
Well, part of that actually came from the fact that I was business manager for Electricians Union in Las Vegas for a number of years, and it's called the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 357, of which over a period of time, I believe we had five, it was very involved in politics, and I believe we had five electricians over a period of time that were, in fact, legislators from Nevada. And with my union background, everything, I always thought that was real good. But at any rate, how I got involved was the fact that running a union, even though I was not president, but I was business manager, which is the main person that runs the thing, I learned procedures because we had one or two meetings a month, and you had to know how to make motions to do this, that, or the other. And within any organization, whether it's a union or what have you, people have their differences of opinions, and so it gives you a chance to learn learn the procedural thing, and that's how I became interested.
Great. How about a little break?
Okie dokie.
End tape one.
There was one point in time I'd made a little note here, or Nancy did, when Jim Joyce had worked against one of the bills that I was working on, and he made a couple of moves that were questionable, and we eventually got the bill passed, but he came back and publicly apologized to me for having done that. And we were good, yeah. I can't remember just what the bill was.
Was it gaming?
Yeah, right. It was gaming tax, yeah.
Okay, you ready?
Rolling tape two.
Okay.
Well, can you hold on just
sure.
1 minute?
Who?
Oh, my God. She would remember.
Okay. And now just turn it. Rolling again?
Okie doke. One kind of a cute little incident I remember is in the old days. Now, I don't know if they are doing the same thing now or not, but anyhow, we had our parking spaces were assigned to us, okay? And generally it was assigned by the person with the most seniority would have his choice and so forth and so forth. So one of our legislators who was very nice, very successful, I forget exactly what business he was in, but his name was Marvin Sedway. And Marvin drove about the most expensive automobile that you could get at the time. It was just a really thing. So I had seniority, if I remember right, either just ahead of, I think it was just ahead of Marvin. And I was driving my wonderful, and I love it, and I wish I still had it, a beat-up old 1955 yellow Ford. And its engine was bad. It made all kinds of noise. But even with whatever was wrong with it, I used to drive it back and forth from Vegas to the legislature. And I had this old 1955 Ford. And one of the newspapers, I think it was, I don't think it was on television, but one way or the other, somebody ended up doing a story about it was really weird because Marvin Sedway had this very expensive car that he had to park at one location, and Bob Price had his 1955 beat-up, noisy old Ford that he was allowed to park in a better spot. And they thought that was a little weird. And they did the story, and it was really funny. I actually wanted to keep that car, but when it finally broke down and quit running, somebody, and I really don't remember the situation, but somebody took it and they were going to try and make a kind of like a, thing that you do historically and put it somewhere.
Oh, like a display.
Like
or
a display
exhibit.
Somewhere, an sure. exhibit. And I don't know what actually happened to it, but they were talking about doing that because they thought it was funny that some legislator would drive that thing for all those years.
What other legislators do you want to talk about from your time? You mentioned Mr. Sedway. How about somebody?
Yeah, Marvin.
In the, somebody from the North in the Senate, maybe?
Well, I have to say one of my I have many friends that I just thought the world of, but one especially stands out in my mind, and it was Lawrence Jacobson. Now, Jake was considered, I don't know anyone who didn't think the world of Jake. He was very nice, very knowledgeable, from the Minden-Gardnerville area. And as a matter of fact, two or three years ago, Jake died from a heart attack, if I remember right, and they had very special services for him out there. And on that particular day, we all gathered at a special location out there, and I can't quite remember what it was. It was a park of sorts, and actually spent most of the day having services for Jake, with various people from all over getting up and talking about his history and things that he did and all. And it was even suggested for a while, and I would have supported the idea to any extent that I could, that they were wanted to change the name of the county to Jacobson County, which I thought would be great. But at any rate, that never came about. But Jake was very special. And of course, over the years, I had many friends and people that you know, you dealt with that were just very knowledgeable and good. Joe Deeney was the speaker. I, as it turns out, was the second longest serving member of the legislature with 29 years. And Jake had me, I mean, not Jake, but Joe Deeney, I believe, had 2 or 3 years more than I did. And he was speaker, of course, for many years. And he was just a very good friend, and I consider a very special person, too. And it kind of, you know, small world. He ended up eventually marrying the lady who was our chief, the word is not secretary,
clerk,
legislative clerk. And they've been married for quite a few years now, many years, and was just very special and so forth. But anyhow, and over through the years, there were just many, many good friends.
Sure. And when you first got to the legislature, the speaker's job would change almost every session.
Yes.
And then Mr. Deeney became the speaker.
Became the speaker, and he was the speaker, yes.
What was the change?
I would say, for one thing, there was a kind of just an overall change in the operation, and people beginning to realize how important it was to have someone who knew what they were doing, who had the experience. And I think that was happening at some other, as my memory serves me, I believe that was happening in some other states also. And there was the procedural and different issues going on. And I think that had something to do, in fact, probably a lot to do with it.
Okay. You would have to be the prime example of a citizen legislator, a union guy who worked throughout your service. How did that aspect of legislative service change in the 29 years that you were there, or did it?
Well, I believe that over the years, we have done a lot more training and being involved in national organizations. When I started, we did not participate. When I very first started, didn't participate in any of the national organizations or to see much about what was going on in other states and all. And now that is not the case. And so I think one of the big changes is there's a lot more opportunity to get ideas and see what's happening in this state and that state and try and gain from their knowledge and experience also.
Interesting. So tell me about lobbyists. You served with a lot of different lobbyists.
Oh yeah, many lobbyists that come to mind. Jim Joyce was probably the first longtime friend and influential lobbyist for many years in the legislature. And it was interesting that eventually he went on and did, I think he went back to Washington, D.C. after he finished, if I'm not sure. But his daughter became involved in the legislative process, and she has a national television show called Eye on Washington. Mary Lee Joyce is her name, very, very nice young lady. And she has a weekly show, and it deals not only with the Nevada legislature, but it also deals with, helps legislatures in other parts of the country, wherever her show is. And what they do is they look at subject matters that are happening in Washington that will affect the various states. And like in our case, a lot of it has had to do with the Nevada test site, and should we store, one of the big subject matters is, should they store the waste on the Nevada test site and so forth. And so anyhow, Jim Joyce was Harvey Whittemore is another lobbyist who was very influential in his day working, and I was considered myself friends with and helped on many different things over the years. But the lobbyists are very important, and there's with the Nevada legislature, I think, anyhow, there is so much out there to help train organizations to deal with just regular citizens who come into the legislature. I think we get a lot of citizen input now, too, that is important.
You did a lot of work on women's issues. You
yes.
spoke about the ERA, and you worked on a constitutional amendment.
Amendment,
Tell
yes.
me about those.
Well, I just, I don't know, maybe out of pure coincidence or what, I had been very opposed to issues that over the years and the ideas to limit women's. There was a time when the process, the general mentality of the average citizen was that men would make better legislators and more involved than women were. And I did, just because, I don't know, because of the organizations that I'd worked with, and also to the degree that having been married to a politician, my second wife was, as I indicated, a city commissioner and so forth, and being involved in politics and around and knowing others, that I thought that that, you know, just didn't fit in with our time now. And so that's how I kind of got involved in that whole subject matter. And of course now it's very extreme in the other way. As a matter of fact, women in the legislature, in political positions around the country have, and I think in some cases perhaps hold more positions than guys do. It's turned around very actively.
When did your wife Nancy run for office?
Yes. She initially, when we ran, as I said, her first involvement was helping her friend, good friend, run against me. And she became quite interested. And then she ended up running and being elected as a university regent, and was very involved. And I might say when she started, when we got married in her politics and so forth, she was a Republican. But eventually, through the activity of one of our very involved and very successful politicians, she ended up changing and becoming a Democrat. And I have to give my thanks to George Bush for that. And he helped her change her mind, decide she should become a Democrat.
What was it like for your family to have two elected officials serving at the same time?
It always worked very, very well. My daughters, I have three daughters, and they were all off and on their own by the time Nancy and I got involved in politics. And she has two sons, and they were on their own too. They were not involved in politics. But they have always been very helpful in helping us whenever we needed it to get involved. But it worked out very well.
Great. So I'm going to ask you, if you think of all the legislation you sponsored as a member of the legislature, is there a bill that you're most proud of?
It's a little bit hard to say about one particular bill, because over the years I was very happy and proud of different ones that I had been involved in, was able to get going. I was very happy, for example, it wasn't a real big deal, but still, that we were able to take the sales tax off of food. I was happy and proud of that. And the there were so many that I nothing immediately comes to mind to me.
Maybe we can get Gwen to take a picture of this one. You did some work on lobbyist registration.
Yes.
And that, disclosure of money.
Disclosure of how the money was being spent by the lobbyist and who they were working for and dealing with. Because I felt, and I think most people do, that it's important to know who the influential people. Now, we know that in Nevada, of course, gaming has been, and that's not surprising, or one of the most influential lobbying groups, and as they should be, because the most of the money and so forth comes from there. But anyhow, in this particular year here, which was 1991, you probably can't see it, but I ordered up and what turned out to be Assembly Bill 651, and every legislator except I believe one, and I can't quite remember who it was, signed on to it. And what it does is require lobbyists to provide additional information in registering state statements and monthly reports, and it goes on to talk about them having to tell where they're spending the money and who's giving it to them and that sort of thing. And
at a very low threshold, as I recall.
Yeah.
$2?
Yeah.
It was really low at first.
Yeah, it was real low at the beginning. See if I can remember.
What it says in that bill.
I don't think it says in here, but it was a low amount. Yeah.
So what was that like in Carson City? Do you go out a lot? Did you see lobbyists after hours? What is that whole piece of the business like that people don't see?
Well, the answer is yes, you do. It has gotten a little more. Now the legislators also have to give reports and do things. Sure. And so it's gotten a little more detailed, or probably a lot more detailed than it was in those days. But actually, the kind of normal thing was there were maybe three or four restaurants or places that you went and have dinner or what have you, and the lobbyists would come over and talk to you and buy your dinner and things of that nature. And that was pretty common. But and on occasions, there were occasions where you might even take a trip or go somewhere on a meeting, like to San Francisco or a National Conference of State Legislatures or things of that nature, where you would go to and lobbyists would end up being there from your state or your location and discuss issues and procedures mostly, but back and forth. So it there was a lot of interchange.
Mm-hmm. You had a life incident at the Reno Airport at one point in your career,
yes,
right?
Yes, yes.
Life and death incident.
Life and death.
Tell me about that. It
was in between legislative session, and I was coming up to the legislature for an interim committee meeting, and I got on the airplane and was flew from Las Vegas. I lived in Las Vegas in those days, and got to the Reno Airport, and after I got off of the airplane, one of our security people had driven up from Carson City to pick me up to take me to the meeting. So he was waiting for me, and I got off, and he was waiting there where you get off the airplane, walk down said hi and started to talk to him, and all of a sudden I started feeling really, really weird. And I've had diabetes for a long time, and I end up falling over, as a matter of fact. And I, as I was falling, the last thing that I always like to kid about, but I'm not even happy it worked out that way, was I saw this very beautiful, tall, blonde girl. And I went down, and I actually, when I hit the ground, I died. And they estimated that I was out for about 3 minutes or so. And of course was taken to the hospital, and I ended up having a three-way bypass on my heart. I had, in fact, and my heart had quit working. But anyhow, it turned out, and we got some cute press and stuff over, that the young lady that I saw when I was going down, her father, who was my age, had died a couple of years before. And she was there with him, and she didn't know how to help him or anything. And she had felt guilty about it. And she went and learned how to give mouth-to-mouth and how to resuscitate someone. And so it turned out, like I say, when I went down, she saw me, and I was like about the same age as her father and what have you. And she came over, and of course I don't remember any of this, but she gave me mouth-to-mouth and resuscitated me, and actually brought me back. And so naturally, as time went on, I was very happy about that. But there was a lot of interesting newspaper articles about it, including some people speculating, well, why would anyone ever want to save the life of a politician? But other people in letters to the air said, well, you have to remember, she didn't know he was a politician. But anyhow, I was very happy that that came about. Sure. And I ended up having a heart, like I say, three-way, and then I ended up getting what do you call the thing that keeps your heart going?
Pacemaker?
I have a pacemaker now, but initially I started out with a the other item.
I can't think what it's called either.
Yeah, and anyhow, a defibrillator. And I had a defibrillator for a few years that kept me going. And then we started having some problems with it, so they removed it and put in a pacemaker, and I have a pacemaker now.
Good. So did you change anything after your death experience? Did you approach the job differently?
Well, I try, although I'm not as good as I should be doing, but I try to get more exercise and be more careful about what I eat and
you
the items
great.
And
You're
so
than
forth.
You were
yeah, right.
But you yeah. look great.
Yeah, and so I do try to do that and follow along. And I, on some occasions, have toughed it out, and we sign up to go to senior dances. So get a little exercise dancing.
Bob, is there any piece of legislation or a vote that you wish you could take back? Is there anything you regret in those 29 years?
Well, I have to say nothing immediately comes to mind, but I know that there, if I did a little studying and went back and looked at the thousands of bills that I voted on, there would be some that I would, but nothing immediately comes to mind.
What do you think you heard the most from constituents on? What kinds of issues would they call you about or write to you about? Was it because you were on taxation or some other area?
Well, from the citizenry, actually you got a very broad situation of people being interested in things. I mean, obviously everybody's interested in taxes mm-hmm. and things that cost them money. But nothing immediately comes to mind to me. At different times, there would be subject matters that would be of getting public interest out. Education is probably one of the strongest, most continuing subject matters that you have. But of course, the people that are in the field, the teachers and the educators and so forth, the people that are involved in that are very knowledgeable and very talented. And so, you, I would say that education is an ongoing subject matter that's generally high, and I think that's true in most legislatures and situations too.
Sure. One of the issues that would have come up during your time was the nuclear waste dump.
Yes.
And with your background at the test site, and
yeah.
you chaired this committee on high-level radioactive
waste. High-level radioactive waste.
Tell me about that issue during the legislature. What was that like?
Well, it was not too surprising that that has been a controversial issue over the years. And when the federal government started taking a look at Nevada as a possible location for the radioactive waste, having worked at the location and back in the tunnel and so forth, where they were thinking about putting it, I have had generally been supportive of the idea. I am not quite as concerned as many people about the nuclear waste, except that I have to say I would have some concerns about when they transport it, whether it was on a train or bus or whatever, that we now have so many situations where we have people that are want to do things, whether it kills them or not, what is the word I'm looking for?
Terrorists
and so forth, that it would be an ideal subject matter for terrorists to take a part in. And so that concerns me to some degree. Mm-hmm. And so I'm in. Now, I have visited several of the sites over the years where they have the waste stored now, and it seemed to me, you know, just that most of them are very adequately protected, and they have all kinds of equipment and people and everything there. So I'm not sure. In fact, I don't necessarily think that it has to be transferred at all, but I was not always opposed to it coming to the Nevada test site.
Okay. You seem to have gotten along with everybody while you were at the legislature, and one of those signs to me is you were a co-sponsor on a lot of bills.
A lot of bills.
But you co-sponsored. Did you have a philosophy about that?
Well, I always thought that unless you were absolutely opposed to whatever the issue was, if someone wanted ask you to co-sponsor, I felt that you'd go ahead and support them and work with it. And it would only be on rare occasions if there was something that I absolutely opposed, because and I was always fortunate that I had many people co-sponsoring with me, so I thought that it was just made it work a little bit better.
So you had the rare opportunity to be a committee chair in the famous 1995 session that was divided 21-21.
Oh, yes.
You never see that again.
Yeah.
What was that experience like running a committee? Your co-chair was Jeanine Strode.
Yes.
What was that like?
That was really interesting, as a matter of fact. And that was one of those occasions where you truly did look at every issue and try and learn as much about what was going on, the politics of it, not necessarily letter by letter of what the situation was. And was probably one of the more, that was the most interesting session that I ever had the opportunity to serve in.
Did you take turns in your committee? You would chair one day, Janine would chair one day?
Yes, we did a fair amount of switching back and forth.
And committee chairs had to agree to bring a bill to a hearing?
Yes, right, yes.
And the speakership rotated.
Hetrick, and fortunately over the years had been friends with Lynn Hetrick also, and had served, of course, with Joe. So it was extremely interesting, and worked out. It worked out okay, as things may. I had some other things happen that year. I had had a foot operation, and with my problem with having diabetes, you often have to go to the restroom. So they end up changing my seat over to the very corner, the closest to the door going out. But I was also in a wheelchair, and I couldn't, the bathroom that was there was not equipped so that you could get into it with a wheelchair. So the legislature was good enough to make arrangements, and we had a contractor come in and redesign the restroom so a person, as it should have been anyhow, because you have other citizens that come and there was no wheelchair accessible restroom, get the restroom so somebody could get into it with a wheelchair. Is one of them little personal things.
You left the legislature, you ran for re-election, and had a primary opponent. Was that the first time that you'd had a primary?
Let me think
probably
about
a long
that.
Time.
Yeah, a real long time.
How right did the last campaign first go?
It went good. There were some people who felt that there was something a little funny about the actual counting of the ballots, because I only lost by, if I remember right, I think it was 12 or 13, but it was a very small amount. But there, it was one of those situations where, under one way of counting, I won, and under the other way of counting, I lost. And some people, including Nancy, thinks I still won, but I didn't challenge it or anything of that nature.
What have you done since leaving office? You relocated to Northern Nevada. What else do you do with your time?
Well, both Nancy and I, with our backgrounds in the politics, were very involved in political committees and organizations and so forth. Now, my wife Nancy is also a Chief Master Sergeant in the Air National Guard, the Nevada Air National Guard, and she is a member of a national, very important national committee of theirs, and they send her to meetings across the United States. In fact, she's going to be leaving a little later in May to a meeting in Knoxville, Tennessee for a week that she chairs and does business and so forth. So we've been involved in those types of things. I've served on two or three city or county committees, and we like to go to the city council meetings and so forth, and we kind of keep involved in things that are going on around us. So
and they're naming
we enjoy
after
it.
You,
yes, that was very special. In Las Vegas, they are currently in the process of building a beautiful park and a senior citizen center, and so forth. And they chose to name it Bob Price Robert Price Park, and it is very nice. I can show you. I have a picture of it if you want to look at it later on. But anyhow, it was very special, and they did that. And
okay, I'm rolling.
So tell us about the park.
Okay. Nellis Air Force Base is right up here, and so they put the park on
looks like Lake Mead Boulevard.
Lake Mead Boulevard,
yeah.
Which runs east and west, and Lake Mead does.
Yeah.
Pardon me. in this case, runs east and west, and when you get out to it, they're building a senior center.
Oh, wow.
That's going to be a part of it. And of course, a swimming pool and the pool house and deck and all that sort of thing. And then they have this beautiful park that you can do a little putting of your golf balls around and have recreation areas and so forth. And it's just very, very special. It's just
great.
Very special.
You want to get a picture of this while you're on the Quint? You snap that. This is your Western Jubilee outfit here.
Yes.
Cowboy hat. Got it? Okay.
This really was neat that they did this. Right over here is a great place to eat.
That's good.
Old-time restaurant.
Always good in a park.
Yeah.
Just going to ask you that one question.
Okay.
I'll put on the Warren Hardy thing, too, when we go. Okay. So we've remembered the name of the young man from your street. It was Warren Hardy.
Warren Hardy. He was my next-door neighbor when he was a little boy. And so I always have kind of thought, maybe my influence got Warren involved in politics and so successful and what have you.
Well, he inherited your love of history because the
yes.
Oral History Project was originally his bill. It was
that's
in the
great.
Budget, but it came from
Senator
Hardy.
That's great.
So my last question for you, Assemblyman, is if we look back at your 29-year career, what do you want us to remember you for?
Well, I think it would be that I would like to be remembered as a friendly person who was interested in what was going on in our community and tried my best to do what I could to be of any assistance and what have you. And I think as a legislator, the same way, I always felt it was important to try, and this is not unusual among politicians, to get along with folks and to learn what the various subject matters were and to try and get your two cents in worth. And I just really have enjoyed that. And even after being in the legislature, I have participated in committees with the community, and I like to go to city meetings and to county meetings and so forth, and just keep an eye on what's going on. And in fact, Nancy, and Nancy is the same way, my wife, and she's on the state historical committee, and so she keeps involved in everything too.
Very good. Thank you for your time this afternoon. Appreciate it.
This has been so great. I can't tell you how much I really appreciate it.
It's all pleasure.
And tape two.
And then around on the other. I always have fun. I'll tell somebody when we're there.
Okay. And then he is here.
Okay.
Put this back on the piano.
Maybe let me just do a little close up. I didn't get it. Be good for cutaway.
In fact, you know, you might be able to help me with some of this. Now that I think about it.
Look at these.
Oh my gosh.
And see, they have a little message. My God.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And see, she has a message, and I have a pillow. Maybe you can tell me what it is.
No,
what
you
yes.
Okay.
Did you show her?
No. Make me blush, Bob.
There's one of the newer ones.
Oh my gosh. I'd be the one for
and
the
And plus, you, they have a deal where you can send them your picture. In
the intensive state of America. Poor Mrs. Clinton's always bad for New York and bad for the U.S.